This week on Behind the Lens, the Louisiana Department of Education released its annual school performance scores. 62 schools ranked C or below. Marta Jusin has our report. And the New Orleans City Council approved new electric and gas rates for the city and slapped Entergy with a $1 million fine for excessive power outages. Michael Isaac Stein has more. Also, neighbors say a house in Algiers Point that caught fire this week was a disaster waiting to happen. The house belongs to State Senator Troy Carter. Charles Maldonado has the details. I'm Jessica Rosegard. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by The Lens.
Brought to you by community support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
The Louisiana Department of Education released its annual school performance scores this week, and the results aren't great. Lens education reporter Marta Jusin is here with more. Marta, let's start with how school performance is scored. What factors go into the assessment?
Sure. So there are many factors that go into school performance scores, which come out every year. For elementary schools, the state takes into account state assessments, both just kind of straight up, that standard score that a kid actually gets on their test in the spring. And then the other thing they consider is whether or not a student has improved from year to year. So if a student is on track to get to a mastery level within the appropriate amount of time, they're going to be getting points in what is called the growth grade. So that year-to-year measurement is called the growth grade. And then for high school, it's a little bit more complicated. You have both the standardized assessments, you have an ACT score, you have the graduation rate, and then you have something called strength of diploma, which is basically what opportunities are we giving students? Do they have AP courses? Are they earning alternate certifications in high school?
So all of that comes together, and each school is given a letter grade. This year, in this assessment, 8 schools received A's and 11 schools received B's. How does that compare to last year overall?
It is pretty similar, and what you'll notice is that it's a lot of the same schools that are getting those grades, several which are selective admission schools, and then we do have a few that have hopped in and out of that range.
On the other end of that spectrum, 12 schools got an F rating, but of those 12, some are already closed and others we know are facing closure.
Right. So since these scores are from the end of last year, or the 2018-19 school year, 4 of those 12 schools had already closed over the summer and the district had been planning on that. Now we're kind of in that annual cycle again, and 2 of those 8 schools that are left are up for their contract renewals this fall. Those contracts are not going to be renewed, but that still leaves 6 schools that have Fs that are going to be open for the remainder of the year and possibly into next year, or likely into next year unless the district takes some serious action.
And how does that compare to last year?
I think we do have a few more schools with Fs, but because those ones closed over the summer, it's a pretty similar amount that are like currently open in this year. And then the other thing that you see is like in the past when we've had schools with Fs that have operated for several years in a row. Yeah, so we do have some new schools in that F rating category. Both of New Orleans College Prep schools have dropped into the F category, which obviously is a little bit concerning if you're a parent in that network. They operate both Cohen High School and Crocker Elementary School. And then another school that slipped to an F is Lafayette Academy. I believe they were B or C last year. I'm not sure, but they have moved down to an F. And they're the school that's been moving around because of asbestos problems in their building. So you have to wonder if those environmental conditions and then just all of that switching around and maybe students and teachers coming and going, how that's affecting your performance on standardized tests.
So we're going to have 6 F-rated schools continuing past the end of this school year and into next year. Is there any good news out of this assessment?
I mean, I think the good news when these things come out is that they give us an honest look at where we are as far as our students are scoring on tests, as far as our ACT scores and our graduation rates. I think this is a rather tough round of assessments. What we have noticed is that that growth score that I talked about earlier, that year-to-year comparison, it really appears to be cushioning the scores the grades that schools are receiving. A majority of the schools in the city got an F on the straight assessment part. So then when that's mixed with their growth score, you kind of see them all over the A through F grade board. But a lot of our schools just straight up got Fs in the assessment portion. And, that's not something you really want to see.
What do NOLA Public Schools officials have to say about that?
NOLA Public Schools was very quick to point out that their growth grades were good at many of their schools. I think they said 74% of the schools had an A or B in growth. And while that is certainly good news and promising, district officials also recognize that they have a lot of work to do, and they've said that outright.
Have they identified any path to getting that work done and actually making these schools better?
The district didn't explicitly say anything about that in the last week, but I know district officials in the past and, for example, State Superintendent John White, they have talked a lot about the curriculum that's being used in schools. They've been trying to align schools to what they call Tier 1 curriculum, which is a curriculum that closely aligns with the state standards in Louisiana, which have been changing and getting harder over the last few years. There are some local groups like New Schools for New Orleans, which are trying to put money into schools to get them that better curriculum. But then as Superintendent White pointed out on a call this week, you know, that curriculum doesn't really mean much if your teachers don't know how to use it well or if they're not using all of it in sequence. So I think there's really a lot of things that need to line up to make sure that we're really providing a solid education for our kids. And one that's going to align with the standards that, you know, state officials have decided that our kids need to know to be ready and prepared for the world.
Following up on your recent reporting, Mary D. Coghill and Joseph A. Craig Charter Schools are up for renewal this year and were expected to receive an F on their assessment. That did indeed happen. So what happens next with them?
So those parents, actually, I bet they've probably already heard from the district. And then at meetings during the week of November 18th, the district is going to, Superintendent Lewis is probably going to come out with his recommendations for those schools. It appears like they'll be taken over by other charter groups. The district has not said that outright, but we know that those schools are in nicer, newer buildings, and that can be a factor in whether or not a school closes or gets taken over.
And regarding John F. Kennedy High School, which fell into problems during the 2018-2019 school year with allegations of grade inflation and a graduation scandal, what was their assessment and how does this scandal tie into that?
So Kennedy ended up receiving a C overall. What you'll notice, and this is kind of similar to what's happened at a lot of the schools that got Fs on their assessment portion, is that Kennedy did indeed get an F on the assessment portion. They also got an F on the ACT portion, and the ACT, you know, is a standard test that would take across the nation, so that's a good measure of knowledge. And then on the other side of things, you see they get a B for a strength of diploma. That's the type of classes they're offering, you know, whether or not AP classes are included. But I would like to note there that the state, when they issued their report this summer, said that Kennedy was having problems with its AP classes. So I'm really curious to know what the district has done in regards to reconciling that with those with the report card that's come out. And then Kennedy also got an A for its graduation rate, which little did I know is actually based on the 2017-18 graduation rate. It's not based on the most current year. So I think those are kind of hanging out there as unaudited numbers, to be honest. And I would be really interested to hear what the district plans to do about this current set of graduation data that will be used in next year's score.
Right, because as part of the investigation into what happened and the audit, this year's graduation rates were kind of revisited in terms of if students had the right credits and the right grades. Last year's, the 2017-2018, which counted towards this assessment, those graduation rates haven't been looked at in terms of this current scandal.
Right. No one, to my knowledge, was combing through the 17-18 data with a fine-tooth comb. And that's what they did this summer at Kennedy, and they found a lot of problems.
Marta Jusen, thank you so much for your reporting.
Thank you.
The New Orleans City Council approved new electric and gas rates for the city at one of their meetings this week. The council says the new rates will lower electric bills by an average of about $3 per month for East Bank residents and keep Algiers bills about the same, for now anyway. Lens reporter Michael Isaac Stein has been following this story. Michael, how did the council decide on a new electric and gas rate?
So the new rates were decided through this procedure that's called a rate case. It's a pretty widely used procedure when it comes to utility regulation. But yeah, basically it's a process that's gone on for over a year now. The evidentiary record is huge. They took input from Entergy, from the council's advisors, from parties that had come in to give their opinion, such as some consumer advocates and such. And the rate case actually decides a lot. It's not just, gas and electric rates. It's also a way for the council to set some really important, regulations. So, for example, in this rate case, they've set out, a way for consumers to buy into a green option on their bill. So this would basically be an option that says, okay, I'm fine with paying more to have all of my energy sourced from renewable sources, for example. The details of that are still being worked out, but that's another key piece of the rate case. And it's pretty significant because there hasn't been a rate case filed, a comprehensive rate case in over 10 years. So it's a pretty big moment for utility regulation.
So it hasn't happened in over 10 years. Why now? And when does the rate reduction go into effect?
The why now question, it's an interesting one. I think the utility chair, Councilwoman Helena Moreno, she's been very active in that role. Utility chair, I mean, there's a wide degree of kind of involvement that you'll get from utility chairs because it's a very complicated thing. And in order to really create change, you have to learn a lot. And I think Councilmember Moreno has been a very proactive chair. So, yeah, she kind of initiated the whole process. The new rates are actually retroactive back to August. So how this is going to happen isn't quite clear yet, but customers should see a credit for overpaying over the last 3 months. Now, like you said in your intro, the rate reductions, it's being argued that that's a pretty temporary measure because something that's not included in our bills yet is the cost for two new power plants that Entergy is building. One is a solar plant out in New Orleans East, and one is a controversial gas plant that's also being built. And so once those rates get included on our bills, we will probably see our bills go up relative to this year.
So don't get too comfortable or too excited about a reimbursement on your bill or a lower electric bill through the end of the year. What is Entergy's reaction to all of this?
So the reason why we're going to see some rate reductions here, it's a change in basically the profit that Entergy is allowed to collect, right? So the main issue here was something called the return on equity. So basically, when Entergy makes an upfront investment on something like a gas plant, they're allowed to make a certain profit off that front by, billing their customers extra. So the rate, the ROE, was 11.1%. The resolution lowered that to 9.35%. Now, Entergy the whole time had been arguing for a 10% rate. So that's kind of where they were. And their opposition kind of heated up a couple weeks ago after the utility committee, approved and unanimously the resolution. And so they wrote to the council, both the CEO of Entergy New Orleans and their vice president of regulatory affairs, with kind of these threatening emails saying that, they would bring forward litigation, or they would, if the rate stayed at 9.35%, they would open a new rate case next year, which would cost customers an additional $7 million in just regulatory costs, attorney's fees, and like that. So it kind of ramped up, and we should notice there was some interesting timing. So they when these two letters were sent, they were sent in the evening at around 6 p.m. That morning, Entergy Corporation, the larger company that owns Entergy New Orleans, they had their third quarter earnings call with investors. And at that during that call, the CEO of Entergy really stressed how important it was to lock down good return rates from regulators like the city council. And it was only a few hours after that that these letters came. So the timing is worth noting.
Regarding the lowering of the profit rate, Mayor LaToya Cantrell also objected to this move by the council. Why?
So to really know why, we would have to talk to the mayor. She hasn't responded to requests for comment on this. But she wrote a letter to the council a day after those, letters came in from Entergy, basically backing Entergy's request. And the reason that she gave in the letter and the reason that Entergy gives for wanting the higher ROE is that it's necessary in order to be able to attract the funding necessary to do everything we want to do, right? So, more energy efficiency programs, more solar power. Entergy is saying that without the higher ROE, they're not going to be able to find the funding for those projects. Now, another reason that the mayor may have backed Entergy on this, it came out a week later that Entergy had sent a settlement deal to the mayor and the council. And part of that deal was that Entergy would provide $75 million to the Sewerage and Water Board, mostly for projects that had to do with getting power to the Sewerage and Water Board. You know, a lot of these water boil advisors we've had have been because if one of these pumping stations loses power for even a second, you know, that will trigger a water boil advisory. So so they offered the $75 million. The council, especially council member Helena Moreno, was not convinced that the offer would be a good one for residents because basically just the specifics weren't there. So it wasn't going to be a $75 million contribution for free, right? So it's likely that those costs would be recovered from ratepayers. So, you know, Entergy customers would be paying the $75 million, plus we didn't know what rate of return they would get. So it's possible that, you know, we'd get what's equivalent to a pretty bad interest rate on that $75 million. So ultimately, the council didn't buy into it.
In addition to the decisions on a rate change and profit rates, the city council also levied a $1 million fine on Entergy for what they say is, quote, inaction and omissions in mitigating thousands of power outages that the city experiences every year. You and I talked about this a while back. This fine was expected, right?
Yeah, it was. And it was passed through the utility committee unanimously, so it was expected to go through. But at the same time, so was the rate case. And so when the rate case came up at the general meeting, it actually, you know, there was some pushback from council members. It did not pass as easily, you know, as it did through the utility committee. So there was a little bit of fighting. Council member Jay Banks in particular, he wanted to take it off the consent agenda so that they could discuss it further and explore Entergy's $75 million offer a little bit more. You know, the $1 million was kind of tied into the deal that Entergy was talking about. But ultimately, they both passed on the consent agenda with Jay Banks as the only dissenting vote.
So this $1 million fine that Entergy is being slapped with by the city council, where does that money actually go?
Where exactly it's going to go is unclear. The resolution says the money will be used to, quote, benefit ratepayers, end quote. So it's a little open-ended. And you also remember that earlier this year, Entergy had to pay a $5 million fine for its role in a scheme to pay actors to come to city council to support their projects. That money hasn't been allocated yet as well. So we now have, you know, $6 million in fines from Entergy that we don't know exactly where it's going to go, but you can expect it to go to utility regulation or you know, utility improvements in some manner.
And, you know, just as a reminder to our listeners, that story about the actors showing up at city council meetings in support of Entergy's new power plant, that's a story that you broke, and it was award-winning reporting by Michael Isaacstein for The Lens. Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you.
A house in Algiers Point was severely damaged in a fire last Monday night. The house contains 4 rental units, and none of the residents were injured, though several of their pets died from smoke inhalation. Now, a house fire doesn't always make news, unless it is owned by a state senator. Lens editor Charles Maldonado joins me with more on this story. Charles, obviously accidents and fires sometimes happen no matter who owns a home. What makes this story particularly interesting?
Well, 2 things. One, as you said, it's owned by a state senator Troy Carter, who represents a West Bank district. And the other thing is that over the years, this property, this house, has been subject to a number of code violations. It's currently, according to city records, Senator Carter owes at least $8,400 in city fines and maybe more than $10,000 in city fines due to a number of violations that have been upheld by a city hearing officer.
Yeah, in June 2018, a city inspector was actually called out to the house. What specifically did they find at that time?
It was 14 different violations, actually, and it, you know, kind of ran the gamut. Trash and debris, poor foundation. The balcony wasn't securely attached. Just a large number of fairly serious violations on this house. Now, there was nothing in the violations list that appeared to relate to wiring or anything like that, to be fair. But the neighbors around this property whom I spoke to told me that they had been concerned about this house for a very long time.
When those kind of fines are put on a homeowner, how long does somebody normally pay that off and take care of that sort of thing?
Well, technically, it's supposed to be done in 30 days, you know, payment and to begin work on this. In this case, we're talking about more than a year. And, Senator Carter, when I spoke to him on the phone, he told me that, this was all kind of a big mistake, that this was all based on feuding between one of the neighbors and one of Senator Carter's tenants. And that, he said anybody can say anything they want to the city. And in this case, he wasn't able to make it to his hearing. So he characterizes it as just a default judgment. However, there is the fact of this inspector having actually gone out and recorded these violations. It doesn't just go from complaint to hearing. There is complaint, then inspection, then hearing. You know, I pointed that out to him, and he still said it's all a big mistake. And he claimed that he's going to have this reversed.
And one of those neighbors that you spoke to actually said the property was blighted, but there were people living there.
Yeah. So the neighbors all characterized it as a blighted house that was unfit for people to live in. And the city hearing officer likewise characterized it as uninhabitable, but it was inhabited. There were people in it in three of the four units, according to Senator Carter when I talked to him. And at various times, I believe since this code violation case has started, all four units have been occupied.
Any idea on the extent of the damage and what happens to the house now?
It was unclear from seeing it from the outside. The house isn't falling down or anything like that. But the second floor was very, very severely damaged. It looked like the fire consumed much, if not most, of the second floor. You know, if the house wasn't uninhabitable before, it certainly is now. As to what happens next, Senator Carter still has these open cases with the city, and a new one was filed the morning of the fire. So I guess we'll see what the city does from here on out. You know, over the course of the week, I've continued to be in contact with the neighbors of the house. And we're going to be following up on what happens with it.
Charles Maldonado, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to Behind the Lens. I'm your host, Jessica Rosegard. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, please consider supporting independent journalism in New Orleans. Go to support.thelensnola.org and make a donation today.